please. Look out, you fucking bastard.
Well, g'day, Retro Bastard here, and it's certainly been a long time between retro drinks, so no excuses really, just a combination of being very busy, sort of changed jobs, very lazy, and yeah, probably just a bit of a general lack of motivation there, but yeah, trying to get back on the horse and try and deliver a little bit more content. So look, a lot of these things have been rattling around in the head for probably the last 2 or 3 months. It's probably been 3 months since I've done anything, and yeah, it is what it is. So no apologies, no excuses. Life generally gets in the way of most of the things that we do. So anyway, that's what it is. No interview this session, this pod, whatever you want to call it. Did try a couple of little weird avenues, but they didn't really come to fruition, so I'll bounce back into some old content. I've got an old presentation or a bit of a competition that I entered into on piracy. And just to let you know, this month is a little bit about piracy. So, yeah, and look, that's my view of the world. So, yeah, strap yourself in and let's roll the punches. Deo gratias. Yeah, so what's on the bench? What's been picked up? What's going on? Did pick up that The Games of a Lifetime book from Pixel Crib. That's a fairly serious bloody 400-page volume. Cracked through a little bit of it. It's got some cracking art in it and some good stories. So if you haven't got hold of that one, I got into that one pretty early. I think it was sort of, you know, 10 or 20% off, so love myself a good book. I must say, one thing I have been doing is sort of getting into my man pad, and I critically made the decision I was going to have to do some painting and shit in there, and I just said, oh, fuck it, I'm just going running with it. So apart from the painting, I'm pretty much moved into my man pad. I've got bloody big kick-ass 3-meter-long bench, and I'm sitting on it now, and I've got my Mega 65, Commodore 128, my Amiga 1200, my CD32, and I've got a VIC 20 set up, so bit of a Commodore theme going on there, but that's just the way it turned out. So what I'm really hoping to do is use that as a bit of a flip in, flip out, so I definitely like to get like an Atari 800 set up, you know, roll out an Amstrad. So I'll be looking to mix and match that a bit. In terms of machines, I got an Aquarius, $150 off of eBay. It was in its box and everything, which was pretty good, I thought. Yeah, I spoke to a couple of other people, and they're like, oh, shit, you got that all right? And I'm like, yeah, bit of an impulse buy. It's one of those things I've always sort of wanted. And then it did actually fire up because there were some pictures of it running, and I do need to make an adapter which is only a 5-pin DIN plug, but to get the tape going on it. But I don't have any tape, so I was going to try and get the SVI CAS running on it. And yet again, things just sort of got in the way, and then yeah, sort of. Then you go down the rabbit hole, you start watching Aquarius videos, and then there's a gadget you can buy which gives you, in fact, it was over the bloody top. It gave you extra memory, gave an expansion, it gave you access to printers, it gave you a USB, I think it gave you a disk drive. And I had a quick look on PCBWay, although basically £85-90. I'm thinking, fucking hell, that's $200. I ain't spending $200 on an Aquarius just to get the thing up and running. It's got the same bloody shitty green screen as a Tandy, so I'm denied about that. And then I looked at PCBWay, and you could get one through there. The bill of materials, it was like, yeah, for five of them, it was like bloody $380, and then you got to sell them and move them on. Yeah, it was just a pity you couldn't quite just buy, you know, somebody out there with like a 16K RAM expansion. But yeah, the Aquarius is going to be sitting in this box for a little bit, I'd suggest. Did also pick up a C64G, so I got that in from Germany. If anyone's not aware, Germany's not on the shitty eBay global shipping program, so you can actually pick up stuff from Germany not too bad. Well, when I say not too bad, I think it was about $70 to get the thing delivered, which is not too bad. Had yellow keys and stuff, so. But the good thing, as I say, and I've mentioned it plenty of times on this show, that there is access to some cool dudes if you're in a club, and old Enoch went out of his way, and he retro-brided the hell out of that thing, and it come up looking $1 million. So that's gone straight to the Commodore rack. Actually, I have managed to. I did put all my Commodore games and tapes and shit away, and had them in storage for a couple of months. And as I say, I said screw it, and I got out a whole pile of shit. So I set my Epics display up. So I've got like a bunch of tapes there from all the Epics ones, mainly because old Morgan Hetherington from 3D Retro Tributes. So I end up getting the Epics Winter Games little 3D print from him, which has got the. Oh, it's the event where you ski and you shoot shit. I can't remember the name of it. So I do love that part of the actual winter game. So the little diorama looks fucking awesome. I also did pick up the Elite one from him. So that is a piece of art in itself. I got the Firebird one. You've basically got the space station in the middle and your little Elite control screen down the bottom. And you flick a little switch on the side and it's a little 3D motor and the old space station sits there slowly spinning. So, yeah. Oh, I wasn't cheap, but who cares, man? It is pretty bloody cool. So hats off to old Morgan for providing that. It's very, 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 very cool. Also managed to get a shit ton of gear out of storage that was sitting in boxes and stuff. I put some new shells up and I bought two sets of cubes to put underneath my bench, but I fucked up and they don't fit, but they're sitting on top of each other now. So, but yeah, I got a... Well, to go down the sideline, down the side route here, I bought myself a 3D printer and I was borrowing one, which was pretty cool, but things sort of stuck to the bed and it was a little bit hard work, but I got a pretty kick-ass bloody bamboo P1S and yeah, you just send shit to it from your phone. So yeah, got my watches out, been printing watch stands. Funny one this morning, I was cleaning up, I'm getting shit ready for a swap meet and there was a bunch of magazines there and there was a cool-looking Sinclair one that's got the old V on the front cover. And I went, geez, that'd be bloody cool if I could get that out and stand it up. But as you probably know, standing magazines up is a pain in the ass because they tend to sort of fall over. You need a magazine stand. So, yeah, I found a comic book one online. That was a bit small, so I just increased the percentage of the print and made it nutty 12% bigger or something. And, yeah, so I got this thing and I printed it out and stuck it on the wall and I've got this cool-looking... your Sinclair version of V, so I was pretty excited about this. The number of uses are quite scary, but yeah, I've been pulling out shit tons of books and magazines. I've got a pretty good display going on here that I'm actually happy to sit there and I can grab a mag if I want and have a bit of a read. And look, I don't think I'm... Look, I love the Commodore 64 and any of those programming books, don't get me wrong, especially the Osborne ones, but I think my days of sitting there typing out onto a proper computer is fucking well long and gone. I enjoy my retro, but not that much, you know. So, but yeah, so bloody cool to get all your shit out of all your kit out. I did buy another version. I'm a sucker for racing car destruction set, so I have got quite a cool little display. It'd be actually quite nice if I could actually get the old retro bastard display gun. I do have an account on Blue Sky. I should pump some more shit out on there in the next couple of weeks. So, yeah, do love the racing car destruction set. And I also bought a very minty Super Boulder Dash because I like my Boulder Dash as well. So, yeah, and I haven't been a complete lazy prick. I have tried to fix a few things. I had an Atari STE that had a knackered floppy drive in it. Yeah, that's pretty complicated, so I didn't really pull that to bits. I mean, I cleaned the heads and everything, and it still didn't work. Had another spare Atari drive there, so of course I pulled it all to bits and disconnected it, and went and got the other Atari drive and went to put it in and realised it was a completely different size, so that was a pain in the ass. So I just ordered a GoTek for it. Oh, speaking of Ataris, I'll tell you what, I lent a guy in our club, I have a Satan, Ultra Satan for my Atari that I used to use a fair bit. I lent it to this dude and he gave it back to me. And I know he gave it back to me because it was in this box. And I think I've even got a photo of it in the box. But do you think I can find that fucking thing? It's been like, oh, God knows how long. And I set my 3D printer up and I decided next to my 3D printer, I was going to rationalize some shit and get rid of some stuff. And there's two boxes of 3.5-inch floppies there with the clear case lids. And I looked inside and they're like, oh, what's that inside of there? What's that bloody thing? That looks like something. And I lifted the lid on it. Because it's sort of smoky and reflective, you couldn't really see inside of it. And I shit you not, there was my Ultra Satan. It was, it'd have to be 2 years, man. I was pretty fucking stoked about finding the thing. So, yeah, because like, you want to test some shit out on an Atari, and I don't have any other gadgets, so I'll have a GoTek set up. So, yeah, that was that was a bloody shining, you know, bloody glory moment for me. So that was pretty cool. A dude at the club fixed a couple of speckies for us, so pretty happy with that. Got a membrane in, and I got a sexy, light purpley looking case to go on the top of that from Selmo Retro or somewhere like that. That was pretty cool. And I did repair a couple of floppy drives in some Amstrad CPC 6128s, and I got a bunch of discs there that I was testing. So got a bunch more discs to test. I think I got a bloody box of the things there. Must have got 50, 55 Amstrad discs or something there. So people out there looking for discs, I'm going to try and run through those. And yeah, I'll probably bring a few along. We've got a swap meet coming up, so I'll try and share the wealth as you do. So yeah, that's about all that's been fixed from my side of the fence, because otherwise it's going to get something 3D printed for it. Bloody hilarious. And a quick shout out to the dude in the club who fixed my couple of floppy drives and got me a new tank mouse adapter, which died, which is pretty shitty. Thanks, dude. Yeah, so I've always got to have a bit of polish. Now, polish this is... I come across this guy, Level Up with Jeffrey. I think I saw him playing Action Biker, which is a Commodore 64 game, and I did like that from my youth. That was pretty bloody cool. He's from the Netherlands. He talks with a bit of a funny voice, probably because he's not natively speaking English. Nothing against him, but I think he sort of plays upon it. And the funny thing is he actually talks in the third person. What Jeffrey does is Jeffrey jumps his bike. Jeffrey does this. I find the guy quite funny, actually. I tried to team up for a bit of an interview, but he's reasonably flat out most of the time. But I think I might grab him. He plays a fair bit of his content, actually, on a Mega 65. So, he likes different cores, and he mucks around. He tries to get games. Like, there's a VIC-20 core that's just come out for the Mega 65, so he's been trialing games on that. But, look, I just generally like his disposition, and he's a bit of a funny bastard, so I like... I like the stuff that he comes out with. He is a pretty clever bastard. He is writing a game. So he's rewritten the game Warlords, which is, I think it was an old Atari game. You got four castles in each corner and you got to spin around, and he's done a funky version for that. And I think he's got someone to put the music together. But, yeah, he's written it all in assembly, so he ain't no dummy. He's certainly reasonably switched on. But I do like... Jeffrey talking about himself in the third person. As I say, yeah, worth a bit of a laugh if you like sitting there watching someone play games. And yeah, he's been doing a bit of copy and disc back and forward with the Mega 65 to a normal drive and loading games off of there. So, and I see he buys new games, and so got a bit of a collection of Cytronic etc. games there. So it's good to see someone's supporting the community as you do. Tom's Hardware had a bit of a article that only just popped up in my feed the other day. Basically, it's a handheld gaming device that is the same size as one of those vouchers that you get, like JB Hi-Fi or EB Games or Myers or bloody whatever it is that like they have in the supermarkets, and it hangs on those hooks. But this is like a little retro gaming device. It runs off a little Pico that's inside, probably a little bit thicker than one of those normal cards. But yeah, apparently you can just buy it and it's got games loaded onto it and it's ready to go. So yeah, I thought that was pretty cool that retro is definitely making its way back into the mainstream. So keep an eye out for those down at Woolies. Now, some of these articles are a little bit old because I haven't got off my ass for a couple of months. But Phil's Computer Lab did have the old Windows XP Lightning install. So I think I heard this from Reese's... Control it really, Reese, when he does his wrap up for the week. Which I did end up watching that, and yeah, basically, bam, you can just like load Windows in. Well, they say 3 to 4 minutes, but I think it's a little bit longer depending on the type of your machine. But it just uses a Linux kernel to dump all the files, I believe, onto on your Windows machine and bypass all the Microsoft shit. So that's another little bit of gold there for the polish. If you need to get that going, I'll probably give it a crack in the next month or two. Got a few XP boxes to move on. There's another chap that I tend to watch a fair bit, just more than anything in the Raspberry Pi world. His name's Jeff Gerling. He's always got some bloody five pies connected or running a Ray device or cranking out, you know, how many video cards can I connect to a Raspberry Pi through its PCI Express adapter slots, and makes all sorts of gadgets. And yeah, very switched on dude, and got, you know, oh shit, wouldn't surprise me if I have 860,000 subscribers. So, but what he did do is he, him and his old man dug out, and I can see where he, you know, his old man's pretty quirky and pretty switched on as well. They dig out his old Apple II out of their basement and they try and get the thing up and running. So yeah, issues with the screen. Basically, I think they had a little PVM there, a little Sony one. They couldn't get it running on that. And then they ended up pulling out a normal flat screen. They tried another. I think they had a new Apple to HDMI card they ended up putting in it because there was something wrong with the video card. But yeah, eventually they managed to get a little bit of software running on the thing. But yeah, that was a pretty interesting watch. So link in the show notes there, people. Yeah, so the other cool one was Reese from Control at Reese had Bazite, which was a Linux distro. Now, he basically loaded it onto his Atari VCS, like the one from 2021. So actually probably finally get some bloody use out the useless thing. Yeah, and look, basically it's a front end for the Atari, and it allows you to run Steam on it, allows you to run KDE desktop, it allows you to run GOG files under Lutris, it's called. Allows you to run DOSBox. So a whole bunch of people have been supporting it, and they've built a whole bunch of wrappers to go around all this. And yeah, look, he was basically running Wreckfest off the thing. So I know it hasn't got the world's best video card in it, but at the end of the day, ended up getting that running. And yeah, I think I might actually end up whacking that on my little Atari VCS. So yeah, if you want something that's wrapped up into everything, and yeah, it was pretty well done. So yeah, I'll slap that in the show notes. It'll be worth you having a bit of a watch. Yeah, look, you can't really have the polish without having the turd. And this month, the turd would have to be EB Games. So they have on their website now, they've got a list of what they will pay you for retro games. So mainly it was consoles. I think they still take PC games. I haven't traded any games into EB for years. But basically, they're offering like 40 bucks for a Master System, you know, 40, 50 bucks for a PlayStation 1. And that was if it was working. So yeah, if you jump on their website and go to their retro section, have a look there. But yeah, look, I don't think it's really probably that great for the bloody retro community. I know a guy that happened to be in EB Games the other week, and some guy got offered fuck all for all of his stuff. And I think he did a bit of a deal out the back door while the guy was sort of trying to work out what he was doing. Typical EB Gamers. So yeah, he ended up backdooring the guy and got a whole bunch of other PC games and shit off him. So that was a pretty good move. Yeah, I don't really think it's very good for the industry, or for the hobby, I should say. Probably, I just think EB will probably chuck it in after 6 or 12 months and they'll be stuck with all this shit and it'll end all up on eBay. So yeah, better off just leaving it on Facebook as far as I'm concerned, as on Marketplace. But yeah, that's always probably been a turd. Yeah, rolling into Adelaide Retro. Been quite a few meets since I've actually put anything on here. So I apologise for that. But it was, so April was A for April. So yeah, bring anything you want. Bit of a random selection. The coolest thing there was somebody had 3D printed out a Borg PC, and yeah, that thing looked bloody awesome, actually. Yeah, had a fully running PC off of that. There was a bit of everything there. There was a bunch of laptops lined up. Somebody had some MT32 running. There was some 3DOs, which I thought was pretty cool. I took my Atari 130XE along. I can't remember. I don't think that's all I bought, because I was setting up to go to B-Sides, which is another gig that we're involved around. I'll have a quick chat about that afterwards. There are Ataris, Amigas, just looking through the bloody pictures now. I was like, heap of PCs. The boys all had bloody, I don't know what they were playing here. They're always playing bloody, I think they're playing Soldier of Fortune, or I can't quite remember. But yeah, usual pile of bloody games that those lads played as they normally do. Not much to say about April. We rolled into May. May month was reasonably interesting, because we had to, you know, we had to prep up for B-side, so it was a little bit of a weird month. So we weren't too sure we were going to have to tag and test, actually, for May. So May was, that's right, it was bloody Star Wars month, May the 4th, May the 5th, may the force be with you. May I fuck up this intro. Yeah, that was pretty cool. I took a 64 along running. Yeah, I had a 64 running Star, what was it, Empire Strikes Back, and I popped along my Dreamcast, and that was running, there's a Star Wars bloody speedery game there, so that was interesting. Actually, I did get a Dreamcast going. I got the GDMU, didn't work in it. Somebody put the GDMU in it, and yeah, it never really worked properly, and in the end, I just backed it up and popped it onto a proper SD card, and yeah, magically the thing started working. So that was a little bit of an experience trying to get that to work. Trying to flick it into bloody, yeah, naive old me just thought that I could copy the game straight to the SD card. Tried one bit of software, couldn't get that to work. And then, actually, that was where I was downloading the ROMs from in the end. It was like Emu Paradise or one of those other places. In the end, I grabbed all the images off of archive.org, and all of those worked. So I was actually quite blown away that they all worked in the end. So that was bloody great. Yeah, Star Wars night was always pretty cool. I felt sorry for one of the guys there. He did R2-D2 and put a PC inside of it, just a Pi or something, I think, or a mini ITX. I don't think he could get the mini ITX inside of it. But the bloody thing was, I think he said he used 2.5 kilos of white PLA. So, yeah, he was crook and had COVID and couldn't bloody get there. Sounds like I've got COVID. Yeah, he was spewing, but he did bring it along the month after, so it was unfortunate old R2-D2 didn't make an appearance for a retro night, but he certainly did try. So, yeah, no, it was a good bloody mix of random machines. Somebody had a light gun. Yeah, had a fucking light gun set up right across from where I was sitting. The thing was going clack, 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 clack all night. They had some bloody Galaxy Wars going on it. I think they had Dark Forces or something running on their PCs. Everyone had made a fairly good effort to try and get something remotely related to Star Wars. There was all sorts of... Captain Enoch had his bloody little pop figures there, and everyone had a background. And yeah, it was a top effort by everyone. Somebody actually had an Amiga 1200. I'm just looking at these pictures here, and they look like they're running sort of some Star Wars game. So yeah, that was pretty sexy. So yeah, no, that was a pretty good night. A bit of music going on, Atari 2600, so... Yeah, it's always a bit of a cool meet. That was May, and yeah. So in between all of that, we, there was myself, Mike, and Graham. We put our hands up to do B-side. So that's a cybersecurity convention that is run in Adelaide over 2 days. Was on a Friday and a Saturday last year. This year they moved it to a Monday and Tuesday. So a couple of those boys don't really work much these days anyway. Well, Mike does, but I took 2 days off of work, whatever. And yeah, we basically set up all of our gear. So yeah, Graham had a pretty awesome array of old school machines from an Apple II, had a BBC Master that actually didn't work, it bloody died. But Graham being Graham, he got the thing up and running the next day. He had a Mac, there's a Compaq, a lot of portables. So Graham loves his CPM, so there was a couple of CPMs there, Tandy, K-Pro, I reckon, and also an Osborne. And he had a bit of a display of old single-board computers and S100s. Oh, I threw in my dictaphone, the old computer phone from Telecom, so that got a bit of interest going. Really good, diverse crowd there. It was pretty cool. Old Mike Hawkey, well... He is the printer master. He brought along a great selection of printers, plotters. I think he had two plotters and two A3 plotters, and they were spitting out bloody little cards and posters sort of thing. And then he had his A0 or A1 plotter spitting out ATT walkers and sort of all sorts of little patterns and stuff. So that was a really cool point of interest for people to... flock to, and he'd basically get people on the Tandy and they'd punch in some numbers and spit out a bit of a deal for him. So yeah, that was a bloody it was a good couple of days. It was busy and it was flat out, but yeah, we were pretty cool. I took a P3 that somebody in the club had knocked up for me, which had a Voodoo 3 in it, and that basically everyone just played Unreal Tournament on it. That was That was pretty cool, actually. And I took the Dreamcast that I'd taken to the other week. And I took a bunch of box games, actually. Full Throttle and Flight Simulator and Diablo and Wing Commander. And, yeah, look, that was pretty cool. That got people talking, you know. That was great. So, and I took a C64 and the Atari 2600 as well. I had that plugged into a old-school bloody ghetto blaster with a black-and-white TV. So, yeah. A long couple of days there, but I think we had bloody 400 or 500 people through, so that's always a good advert for the club. So, yeah, I think we'll probably do it again next year. And rolling into June was console month, so yeah, there was everything there from PS2s to CD32s, bloody Atari 2600s. I had an old 1977 video pinball from Atari. Couple of ColecoVisions, I got some carts in, and dude from the club put those together, and we 3D printed some stuff for them. N64, I think the coolest machine there was a Sharp GX, video pack computer, G7000 by Panasonic, I think it is. Yeah, that was bloody cool, that. Dude had some cool looking cartridges for that. Quite a few ColecoVisions and Ataris, but yeah, it was a pretty cool night. Oh, Master Systems and Mega Drives. Some dude had a whole pile of handhelds. There was a Lynx and the Mega CD with the attachment on the side, the Mega CD 32. So yeah, that was really cool mix of bloody machines. Next month, this coming up, which is July 11th, is Luggable Night. And laptop, so I can't really stay for long, but I've got a couple of little I did have a pickup the other day, sort of funny. I got it all comes at once, so just to round out, I had a dude that I play ping pong with, like, goes, oh, you're into computers, you want some old shit? And he had a big clean out and gave me like four tubs full of shit. Got a zip drive and a SideQuest drive out of it. There was heap of Windows software in amongst it. It's a heap of floppy disks and crap. So that was, a little bit to sort through. Not too sure what I'm going to do with some of that. And then another guy who I helped out 18 months, 2 years ago, I think it sort of pays to... He said he was moving house, so I cruised on through and got chatting to him. And I walked in, and as soon as I walked in, there was a pile of boxes and shit, and I could see a VIC-20 sitting on top, and I'm like, this is looking pretty good. And yeah, anyway, he... goes, oh, do you want all this stuff? And I was like, yeah, no worries, mate. And we got yakking, so yeah. Rolled out of there with a VIC-20, and in amongst the boxes of shit was also a VZ-300 and a few bits of software. That was pretty cool. But by far the coolest, there's a 486 board and a 386 board, and shit ton of books, which I've sorted through. There were some crappy ones, but there were some cool ones in there, like Windows 3.1 for Dummies. I didn't know the Dummies went back that far, but anyway. I'll go the VZ away, and I'll get the VIC-20's got the two-prong power thing on it, and I don't have one of those power packs, so I'm sourcing that at the minute. Yeah, it was pretty cool little score, but the best thing amongst all of it was there was probably 25 or 30 brochures. I threw a few of them up onto Adelaide Retro. There was Amstrad, CPC, Sega 3000 brochures. Actually, a dude from Tassie goes, oh, I'd love one of those brochures. So I just like posted it across to him. There was great Atari ST, Amiga, and there's some wicked Commodore brochures. There's a little, 10-inch high by 5-inch wide little pamphlet from Commodore with about 20 pages on it that you flip through. It's got all the games and stuff in it. And a local Toy World catalogue from up the road here at Murray Bridge. That was... that had some great shit in it. That had like VIC-20 and Commodore 64 stuff and a little bit of Dick Smith in it. Yeah, that was a colour brochure that, I hadn't seen it before. So, yeah, that was probably the best score out of all of that shit. Yeah, and the best thing was is the dudes had me back there twice. But the first time I was there, I rolled in. He goes, oh, have a look at this. I rolled into his office and I went, oh, that's a Microbits 486. And he goes, oh, yeah, well done. Still runs. He just wants to get a little bit of shit and stuff out of it. But he goes, oh, you can have that when I've sorted it all out. So, yeah, I've been back there twice and picked up some more shit. So somebody's got a HP LaserJet 2 incoming. I think it's a newer HP LaserJet 2, not the old. I think they started at a 3 or a 4, those big heavy-duty serial killer laser jets. But, Yeah, and some more bubble jets and stuff. So I've given a bit more stuff away. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's good to have somebody that's happy to move shit on and not throw it straight in the waste. Yeah, and I took him a very nice bottle of red. Second time I went around there, so yeah, all goes around in the wash. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. Who's going to buy a Commodore? Well, I'm not really a fan of Perry Factrick, or whatever his bloody name is in the first place. Look, I don't mind the stuff that he actually does. And he gets some pretty good exclusive shit. So good luck to him there. But his method of delivery and the shit that his dog and his missus and all the other crap, can't stand it. Actually, the point of unsubscribed. But when you see someone reckon that they bought Commodore, well, that certainly opens the eyes for, you know, get you back into the realm, what the hell's going on here. And to be honest, it's like bloody cringeworthy having to watch this shit. Yeah, so the long and the short of it, I don't want to say too much, but I'll probably rabble on for a fucking too long. Yeah, he's sort of trying to push to buy Commodore. And look, he's been working on this in the background for the last 7 or 8 months. And look, if you haven't heard about this, you've been living under a rock. But yeah, hey, don't get me wrong. He's got a massive passion for Commodore and lives and breathes it. And we all do. So yeah, he's putting in the hard yards, trying to actually acquire the trademarks, which is like 42 trademarks that have all run out. Yeah, what can I say? Yeah, good luck to the dude. I actually think in some ways, I did watch Tech Time Traveler. He had a bit of an article around. He watched the thing and he was like, yeah, he's in the same boat. Guy does what he does. But he said, look, basically he thinks that Commodore is dead. It's done and dusted. It's never coming back. He doesn't really focus on Commodore machines because he said he's only got so much time left on the planet and he doesn't want to waste it on Commodores because there's so many other random cool things out there that no one's actually really covered or really, really using. So, yeah, in some ways that sort of made you feel a little bit like, maybe he is bloody right. Maybe I should get rid of all these Commodores. But that's not going to happen because I'm sitting here looking at some now and it bloody makes me happy. Yeah, look. Look, he's certainly got some people behind him. He's got bloody Michael Tomczyk, who's like, you know, he used to report to Jack Tramiel. Bill Hurd, jeez, that's a big hitter. David Pleasance, the clown from Silicon Valley show. A whole bunch of other bloody people. Badge Man's in there. Look, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's great that they're not going to allow people to put the Commodore name on vacuum cleaners and bloody shredders. So I think I don't have a problem with any of that. That's pretty cool. But I think, you know, look, I had a bunch of stickers made up when I first got into retro, probably 4 or 5 years ago. And I use them here and there. You know, I put one on the back of a phone cover every now and then. I'll get a T-shirt printed for myself. I tried to go down the Redbubble route, tried to find out how I could do it legit. All pretty hard, you know, I got a couple of copyright strikes for some shit that I put up there and I went, I'm there like, but there's always plenty of the same shit that appears on there. How come they're not getting copyright strikes? So it's like, it is what it is. So when I look at Badge Man and I think, well, hasn't he been producing badges with the Commodore logo on them for like the last 10 years? So Perry Fractic's idea is to give back to the community. They've all got one spot they can go to and he's just going to charge 6.8%, which actually doesn't sound too bad, but am I going to want to pay Badge Man's like $5 badge going to go to $6 now? Am I going to want to pay an extra, you know, buck for that privilege? And if we look at some other machines, I look at the Mega 65 now, and somebody said to me, oh, well, you know that you could actually get an official Commodore 65 with the actual badge on it, and it's completely done through Commodore. I'm thinking, well, I think I'm at the point now where I'm just happy to have a Mega 65 and I think it's a bit unique and whatever else. You look at the amount of time it's taken David Murray to dick around with that bloody X-Commander 16. Is he going to sell any more of them because it's got a Commodore badge on it? I don't really think so. And the whole running everything through one enterprise, I think, didn't David Pleasance from, you know, he's a smart cat. He tried to do the same sort of thing 18 months ago and there was that much bloody backlash that he basically pulled the Kickstarter. So Not to say that if somebody said, Craig, for $100, and this is what I like when someone goes, oh, for $100 you can get a share in Commodore, and they're like, well, it's $100 US, that's $180 to me, $200 to those poor bastards in New Zealand, and God knows how many pesos it's going to cost somebody in Mexico. So even if it was $200, I'd probably say, yeah, I've got a share in the new Commodore. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want a return on it. I couldn't give a shit about that. I don't know. Maybe if you had a share in Commodore, then you could maybe get your 6.8% wiped off when you purchase stuff. Who knows? But I don't like the way Perifractic does stuff. Right at the end of it, it's like, oh, bang, there's a, you know, here we go. Have we got the thing from Commodore? Oh, bang, you got to wait till next week. So then we've got to wait another bloody week. And yes, we can maybe buy Commodore if we've all got, you know, raise $15 million. And then, yet again, I was going to be some new products. And at the end of that, yeah, another surprise. Yeah, you're going to wait another week. So not really impressed with the way that's being strung out, I suggest. So yeah, as long as Commodore is probably bought by somebody and not by some multinational conglomerate, then it's probably okay. I just, yeah. I think it's a dead duck, old Commodore, but yeah, long live Jack Tamil. If he was driving the bloody ship, well, it'd be a different story, wouldn't it? Yeah, stay retro. So, this pod is going to have a bit of a chat about piracy. Now, this is my view of the world and some of the experiences that I've had. I think the Statue of Limitations is finished, so probably pretty safe there. But, yeah, just a bit of a general chat about the shit that went down back in my day and a few random things that happened. We are going to finish off with a... what is it like? I went into a competition called From the Vintage is the Old New, which I won the competition. Some other guy really got the shits up about it, and the dude ended up closing his site. But I'll just recite the story I told about pirating shit back in the day for Amiga stuff. So, yeah, pretty funny at the time. Felt sorry for the dude who ran his website, but that's another story. So I guess my earliest vision, or I guess you could call it piracy, was I made the old man, he came around, this is like would have been 81 82 I guess, and he had bought his VHS video recorder around, and he had a copy of ET. So that was pretty much unwatchable and unbearable, and probably scarred me for life in terms of seeing some shit content dished out on a grainy, overwritten thing. I don't even know what was going on. Mind you, I've watched ET now. I probably still don't know what's going on. Apart from the fact when it brightened up a little bit and he got on his bike and he sort of drove across the million, that was maybe about the only thing. Actually, probably, if you think about it, it's actually quite retro, the fact that it was so grainy and so shitty. It was probably like even a late 70s porn was probably had more clarity to it. But that's probably another story. But that was probably my first instance of something that was actually pirated, because I don't think there was much, you know, apart from everyone had a tape deck and we all recorded shit straight off the radio, and yeah, you know, it was pretty valuable there. You had three cassette tapes that was your property that cost you an arm and a leg, and you just kept recording over the top of those bloody three or four cassettes. You didn't have the multitudes of unlimited disk space and shit that you've got these days, so... Yeah, that was my little intro into ET. So I guess moving forward from there, my first computer, I've talked about this before, was a Tandy TRS-80. And look, I struggled to find games in the good games, if you could call them good games, because poor old Tandy. But a lot of those games, you couldn't even actually buy the bloody things from Tandy themselves. You basically had to rely on mail order. So I got the Coco magazines. I'd sit down for bloody hours and type shit out, and I'd save them off the tape. didn't really have anyone else that I could, you know, give those games and stuff to. But I did have another mate, and his old man had a Tandy. He was a rich prick because he had the Tandy magazine delivered to him on tape. So, yeah, occasionally, like, he'd let me copy a tape. And, like, you know, that was back in the early 80s until those double tape decks came out. That was a bloody fairly arduous task. You had to get two tape decks together and the cables and join them up. There was just no other way to do it. Because a lot of those early Tandy games were actually written in BASIC, it wasn't too bad. You could load it into memory, get it there, and then you could save it back out to tape, because 80% of the programs on the old Coco magazine tape, they had no protection on them. So, but that was, you know, apart from getting mail order and actually buying a few games, and I did buy a couple of games, and we all know you were basically going off the screenshots and a bit of a hopeless review, and if that was shit house and you burnt 12 weeks worth of pocket money on a shit game, you know, I think that's where probably piracy sort of started to kick in a little bit. And sort of thinking back, I did do some trading with Tandy cassette games, but shit, I can't really remember who that was. I think there was a couple of dudes I knew from where I moved, from Christie's Beach up into the hills, and there was one guy back there I'd occasionally go back and see, and I think I used to do, you know, trades and take games. Wasn't really until I got my mum and dad got me a disc drive. So once I got a disc drive, things got a little bit easier. And because I moved from the hills, from the sea, I had a mate that I used to go and see. We'd play Commodore 64 games. And yeah, he knew a dude that had Tandy stuff. So I ended up catching up with him. And then I got to the point where I would start trading with this other, it was actually a bird. And yeah, I'd be on the phone all the time chatting to these people about bloody games that were coming out. And, you know, I was in this whole little Tandy Terrace 80 world. There was another dude. He was from the Adelaide Zoo, so he actually lived at the zoo. I never actually met this dude, so it was quite funny. I think we traded games for two and a half years, like Tandy disc games. Yeah, I would like literally send him 10 discs worth of shit, and then he'd send me 10 discs worth of shit, and I never really knew him. Now, to put things into perspective, I lived like 2 km from the post office, and I used to have to ride my push bike down there, and sometimes with Australia Post, you would literally have to ride down there 3 times in a week. But, oh, shit, mate. When that package arrived, I got a bit smarter as I got a bit older there, and I'd ring the post office up and say, is that bloody parcel arrived for Marshall yet? And, yes, I didn't have to drive all the bloody way down. So, yeah, and I just swapped games with him and this other bird I knew from down south. It was sort of funny because actually my mate was going out with this bird, and I'd go down to his place. And that's how I sort of got into the Commodore 64 sort of copying games. So I'd go and spend a week in the school holidays with my mate. So I'd organise to get a shit ton of Commodore 64 games that I would take down there with me. And yeah, it was just funny. Then the dude who had the Tandy Coco tapes sort of knocking around with him as well. And he's like, oh, I was blown away because I went there and he had a SX-64 and I'd never seen anything like it. And he had Impossible Mission and Choplifter running on that thing. I can still close my eyes and see that running. And yeah, so that was just like another avenue apart from his Tandy stuff. We started trading 64 games as well. And then there was the whole schoolyard thing. So not only were we sort of trading, you know, with random dudes, yeah, there was like dudes were copying discs and shit all across the schoolyard and swapping games. And yeah, it was like just a veritable bloody festival of you'd come in on a week, you know, on a Monday, and all of a sudden everyone's bloody, here's 5 new games, because really all you had was Zap 64 to read. And like quite often that was like a month behind here in Australia by the time you got the thing and it would find out. And yeah, look, when you look back now, you think, where did all these bloody games end up coming into the country from? I didn't really know anyone that had a modem. I knew one dude that had a modem, but he always seemed to have a bloody good collection of C64 stuff as well. So yeah, there was a fairly massive network. Unlike my network of two people with Tandys, there was probably 10, 12 dudes. And then one stage there, me and another mate, we got into the business of trying to sell a few games. And, you know, we got some I got onto some cheap video cassette clamshells, photocopied up some pages, and I do remember trying to sell a copy of Frank Bruno's Boxing, which I do feel bad for the dude now because it was really shit. But yeah, we just copied piles and piles of shit. But then there was always the one dude that had, he always had the shit. And it was a good mate of ours. The mother mate of mine ended up with an SX-64 as well. And, you know, he'd come around my place and we'd play Tandy games. We tried writing a game called Thug Exports, but that's a story for another day. And we both were mates with this guy down the road called John. Now, John had a dark, dingy fucking house, but he had so many Commodore 64 games, and we spent a lot of time there playing games. And there was one stage there, we're all playing leaderboard golf, and just come out and like blown away. Had never seen anything like it. Just sitting in his like dingy, bloody cold lounge room, fired up. We're all playing it, and at the start there, you know, three players. I mean, you've got to put your bloody name in, and for some reason, his name was John. But we put John P-O-N in there because I think we're going to call him something else, but it like tapped out at seven characters. Don't ask me why. So I ended up being called John Pon. And I still knock around with this dude. And if we say, oh, we're going to catch up with John, quite often we say, oh, that'd be John Pon then. So it's funny how a bit of old Commodore 64 software can end up giving you a bit of a name. So yeah, John Pon's still out there. He'll probably never listen to this, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, John Pond had a shit ton of software. Like, he had it. So many Commodore 64 games. Like, he must have had, I don't know, 1,200 bloody discs. He had this massive, in the end, he had this massive white tray. Oh, it was like 6 foot by 4 foot deep. And it was just lined with Commodore 64 games. So it's quite interesting. And look, him and his brother stuck with that C64 for years, actually. I ended up migrating to an Amiga, and I ended up with bloody having hundreds and, oh, bloody, you know, must have had 300 or 400 discs. And his old man was a good stick, and he did these Lord of the Rings sort of posters with a frame and pretty specky looking thing. And I ended up swapping 50 Amiga discs for one of these paintings, which is bloody cool. And it was funny how the tables turned that I ended up being the pirate master for the Amiga, because they sort of stuck with a 64. And once I got to Amiga, it was like, oh yeah, no worries, happy to help you out with a shit ton of games. So yeah, it's funny how the tables turn. Yeah, I guess because it didn't branch off into just the 64 and Tandy, we used to copy Amstrad games as well. For my best mate had a, I think it was a CPC 664, which is the funky colored keyed Amstrad, but it actually had a disk drive attached to it. Yet again, his old man. Teachers always end up with bloody English computers, I reckon, or whatever they had in their school. So, because they were quite expensive, the old Amstrad, compared to other computers, especially in Australia. You know, you couldn't just go down to Kmart, wasn't selling Amstrads. You probably had to dig around and try and find one. But, yeah, we were copying games on the Amstrad as well. And I, if I look back now, I had basically, I think, 3.5-inch discs were just out, I reckon, because I reckon Atari 520 STs had just come out, and I think Macs were using them. And yeah, so I managed to get broker this deal, right? Because I think Amstrad discs were like, they were like bloody expensive. Like, you buy a box of floppies for 10 or 12, 15 bucks, but a box of Amstrad discs were like 85 bucks. I remember I thought I'd scored this deal, and I'd lined up this stuff, and I was going to pre-purchase all these discs and flog them all off and make all this money. And it turned out when they turned out that they were actually 3.5-inch discs. They weren't the 3-inch Amstrad discs. That was a bit unfortunate. I quite like the pretty good format, those Amstrad and Sega discs. So I managed to get a bit of a stack of them the other week. And you're getting hard to get, especially you need to get the bastards in from the UK. So yeah, we weren't choosy when it came to bloody pirating shit, that was for sure. Then I guess when it comes to piracy, we probably really turn the wick up when it comes to the Amiga. So as I said before, I've jumped from the Tandy across to an Amiga 500. I got the pack, and I had F-18 Interceptor and a couple of other games. And yeah, that was bloody unbelievable when I first got that. Couldn't believe it. But yeah, games were scarce. Like, I was like an hour from the centre of Adelaide, and to buy Amiga games, you just, like, you basically had to go to one of the massive big department stores to even be able to get games. And yeah, it just naturally flowed that dudes just started copying discs. I remember getting the second disc drive and you started getting crack games. And, you know, that's where the love of the old intro started to come from, a lot of those crack games. And half the time they also had trainers built into them. So, yeah, it was just like, oh, I can get a box of discs. Yeah, you get a box of discs for $10. And, yeah, you'd just be constantly, I'd just be constantly buying discs and bloody disc boxes. And you'd be copying shit left, right and centre. I started work and it was funny because, like, I had my Amiga and I ended up bringing it into work, and because I was doing a bit of shit for, we were printing stuff out, we're paying $1,500 an edit for these bloody printouts of these special forms. I ended up designing them up on the Amiga and bloody got them set up and printed them out at work, saving the old council a packet. So, and then one of the birds whose sister used to come in, she goes, oh, guys at work, guys at school have got the same computer as you. And it was like there was a pair of twins. So in the end, I ended up swapping quite a few games with those guys for like 3 or 4 years. And it's just amazing how you build up those little networks. Yeah, the dude in town that I used to go and see, he used to be into music big time. So I'd, you know, I'd go out of my way if I could find some soundtracker discs. I'd always copy those and I'd bring them down and then he'd swap it for games and all sorts of shit. One of our main avenues was probably when I joined the Amiga Club of South Australia, and that used to be down at Marion. And yeah, that was like once a month on a Thursday night or Wednesday night or something. So yeah, it was funny because I left school and there was a guy I went to school with. I sort of see him every now and then. And his old man lived up the road. And so I used to go and visit him on my way to work. I threw through and yeah, we ended up copying and pirating a shit ton of stuff together between me and old Dougie. He was a funny old dude. He sort of had a serious heart problem and I think his lad had sort of left home and I sort of half got adopted by him and his missus a little bit, and I'd be there like 3 times a week, and yeah, we'd constantly bloody trading. And he used to have an old Beetle, and I'd get there and we'd drive down to Adelaide Retro, and it was there I met some other dudes. I'm just trying to think. I can't probably tell you their nicknames on here because it's completely inappropriate. But we'll just say Ben and Dan. I bloody still mates with those guys today. So, yeah, we used to go to Adelaide Retro, and there was a lot of guys there that bought serious stuff. There was a dude there with a toaster, and they were dead set against piracy. But I guess they were, you know, older, had good jobs, could afford to go and buy software and probably lived in the city. Meanwhile, in the background, we were like complete bloody pirates. We were crazy. So, yeah, and Ben, I remember he used to manage to get a whole, I can't believe the amount of Amiga software he used to get. It was fucking crazy. He'd always have the latest shit, and I'd catch up with him once a week, once a fortnight, and just bloody copy this. And we went to a demo party one time at Adelaide University. Yeah, it was off Frome Road. It was in this big, massive underground sort of hall. They had a bit of a projector there, which wasn't too big. But yeah, it was probably like 50, 60 dudes in there, maybe 70, I don't know. But there was a shit ton of screens. It was like a demo party. There was dudes coding and all that. You know, it's unfortunate that you don't have mobile phones and shit back then. We could have got some photos and recorded some footage. But I remember taking I rolled in there with like a box of discs, 10 discs. I didn't really know where I was going. I was a bit freaked out, to be honest. And I had a copy of Skid Marks there. And it had only just come out. And it was pretty funny. So no one else had it there. So I ended up copying it to one dude. And by the time we left at like 2 in the morning, every dude had a copy of Skid Marks. And they were like all fanging on it and playing it. And yeah. And from that point on, we'd have like these little solo Amiga parties. It was me, Ben and Dan, and we'd just sit there and we'd bloody play MUDs and download them. We had access to a bit of a pirate site, so we'd download shit and, just to have a bit of a copy party as you used to. So, yeah, those good old Amiga days. There's another dude up in the hills that I used to swap games with, and that's what the main story. So once I've finished talking shit here, I'll roll into that other little bit of a story. I used to trade games with him, and yeah, I don't think I stopped trading Amiga games till basically when I moved the bloody thing on. And I guess one thing you could say is that those pirating years were, I mean, they were pretty good, and I listened to the Retro Hour and I feel pretty shitty about the number of games and shit that I copy when I hear some of those people, the amount of effort and resources that went into writing some of those games. I mean, yeah, a lot of sometimes those games are pretty shit and they're pretty well hyped, and then you end up let's call out run out right away, and when you actually got it, it was a piece of shit. And you think, fuck, thank Christ I didn't spend $50 on that. You know, you're only earning $200 a week when you're a lad. And if you had to spend $40 or $50 on a game, because you're already getting destroyed by the CD industry back then when you're paying $25 or $30 for a bloody CD. So screw them bastards. But I guess the one thing you got as you moved out of the Amiga and everything, what I do miss, and which is what I enjoy now, is the fact that you can get, 20 Commodore floppies, pull out a disc, plug it in, load up the directory, see what's on it, especially if it's an unnamed disc, and you've got some random games and you start playing them. Amiga, a little bit the same, got a massive box of floppies there, pull out some floppies and you just plug it in and, oh, what's this? I don't think I played this before, and you end up bloody burning through a couple of games in an hour or so. So I don't think you really get that these days. It's just not a thing. As I moved into the PC era, there was a bit of there was a lot of shareware that was around that wasn't too bad, but, you know, you got a taste of Doom and Duke Nukem. But, yeah, there was, once everything really moved to CDs, and I tell you what, I had a mate called Willie that we used to bloody copy. I had an Amiga. He had a PC. I sold my Amiga when I come back to Australia and got myself a PC, and shit, I was not quite into the things that he was into. Monkey Island and some of those other quite large games. And shit, I remember some of the number of floppy disks that you used to have to back up something. It was ridiculous. We used to PK unzip and zip stuff, and you'd be 37, 40 bloody floppies for some games. It was ridiculous. But that was the only way you could really do it. Didn't really have zip drives. That would have been great. But then, you know, we finally moved into CDs, and that was a pretty good era. I remember that I worked at the council, and we got a one-speed CD-ROM burner. It was a parallel port one, and that was bloody great, mate. We just started copying games like there was no tomorrow, because the first lot of games didn't really have much copy protection. So, but shit, that thing there, I think it was like a penny and 150 or something with a parallel port burner. Mate, you could not do a single thing on that bloody computer. If you wiggled the mouse just about, the thing would just about fuck up a disc. And discs were expensive. They were like, $5 each back in that original day. Yeah, you'd be sitting there watching a CD, right? And it took like nearly, 55 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour. And then the screensaver would kick in and it would completely fuck the disc. And you'd be like, oh, great. Now I've just done $5 and I got to wait another hour. But, worked at the council, so it didn't really matter if we wasted a bit of time. And then, me and the other four of us went in and bought a 4x parallel burner, and it was over $1,000, and we all threw $250 each in. One dude had it, and we copied a fair bit of shit with it, and we moved it around a bit. But I think by the time it got round about the second round of everyone getting access to the thing, I think an 8x burner had come out, and then they started coming out in IDE. So, yeah, we just started copying shit a hell of a lot easier. But I think I just love the format, because I had a bloke, we'll call him Mr. K. He was one of those funny dudes. I'd only see him every 3 or 6 months, and he'd just pop up out of the blue. Crazy fucker. I remember we'd do a bit of a weird run to pick up some shit. I'm at Mount Barker, and he goes, oh, we've got to go to Murray Bridge. Well, yeah, no worries, mate. And he had a Pulsar Turbo, and literally sat on 190Ks all the fucking way to Murray Bridge, and I just went, fuck, dude, like, you mad? He goes, oh, well, you're spending less time on the road, so you got less chance of getting caught. And I'm just like, fair enough. But he was one of those dudes that had, like, you roll in and go, you got any software, dude? Oh, here you go. Here, take these 10 CDs. And I don't know where he got it from. He was in the sort of IT industry, so he probably had access to lots of other dudes and stuff. But, yeah, you get these CD-ROMs, and inside that CD-ROM, it might have 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 games that have been cracked and compressed and had all the shit taken out of them. So they used to be really cool. You roll into a bit of a... Because we used to have lots of LAN parties, so you'd roll in there with a bunch of new games. That was bloody cool. And then finally, I ended up getting access to a mate of mine set us up on this pirate site. So he just teed it up, and it, it ran TLS encryption. And I didn't even know where it was. I think I paid $50 or $100 for it. And shit, that was back in very early 2000. So, well, let's hope the statutes of limitations have actually finally moved on. I was at a council and had access to this site, and like, I'm talking back in the ISDN days, I reckon, before NBN, before ADSL. And the IT guy was pretty cool, and he goes, oh, well, I reckon we can patch that back through the proxy server and push it out through the TAFE network. So I used to fucking rip games back way back in the day through the TAFE, and before 2000, I think, or early 2000s. Yeah, and it was bloody great because you got 128K. It was pretty consistent and solid. And yeah, I'd download a bloody heap of games during the week and rah-de-rah-de-rah. And then I remember I come into work one morning and my boss, and he was a fucking cool dude. He was the sort of guy you could say, it's Tuesday, you go, I'm going out in the piss tonight. Probably calling sick tomorrow so you won't see me on Wednesday. Yep, no worries, have a drink for me. That's the sort of dude, you know, he was cool. Anyway, comes in, he's got a pretty shitty look on his face, and I'm like, oh, what's going on here, dude? He goes, well, you've downloaded some 10 gig. Did you download a massive file over the weekend? I was like, oh, I don't think so. Maybe, probably. I did have some shit queued up. He goes, oh, well, you've used 10% of the entire TAFE fucking network for the month. All in, yeah, so basically for the whole state. So I managed to, in one weekend, use 10% of the fucking data, so... Yeah, it was a bit shitty about that, but he sidelined it through and spun it around and managed to just say some dudes must have left some fucking shit in our TAFE college, which was sort of connected to one of our libraries. So, yeah, that was a bit of a funny old close call, as you do. But, yeah, we moved into the next level of piracy. I mean, we're all copy shit. It was going to Valhalla. Now, the first time I went to Valhalla... Oh, the first time I went to Valhalla, I couldn't believe it, because we ended up playing Battlefield 1942, because that was the first time, I think, a game with 64 players, and just everyone was playing it, so it was a pretty crazy affair. I loved it. It was bloody cool. And then, as you moved into, you can only play Battlefield, for 10 hours straight, but there was always plenty of shit to copy. Now, it was a bit of a... what is it? It wasn't a marker of respect, but it's more of a... how fucking cool am I when these dudes used to roll in with a sack truck and it'd be like 10 tubs just completely full of CDs. It was like ridiculous. Like, these dudes must have had 1,000 copy games. Hilarious when you think back now that they've had to lug all those things around. It was just like, oh, Jesus Christ, look how many games this fucking dude's got. He's got shit tons. But yeah, in between playing games, there'd be a shit ton of FTP servers that you could, you get chatting to somebody, and it was a really good way to get movies. It was just great. You get MP3s, games. It was awesome. So yeah, but you had to sort of juggle it between, if I'm playing this game and copying a whole bunch of shit across, all of a sudden my game became glitchy and jerky. And so you had to sort of set some throttling up, but that was a bloody great avenue. So yeah, but had a few pirate sites around the day, but, and then bloody Kazaa and Napster and all that shit come along and sort of changed the whole scene of the whole bloody piracy. So I guess if you take a step back and look at it, and as I said, as I listen to those Retro Hour interviews, I think that's why I quite like collecting box games and stuff now. I just sort of wish you could give back to some of those programmers and developers who obviously, and let's face it, apart from Commodore going arse about face, I think the Amiga copy and shit was probably too easy. And yeah, for every one game they sold in Australia, there was probably 50 copies of it that he came through the back door. So no wonder, it was probably worse in other countries. So no wonder they pulled out of the whole bloody thing. And a lot of those developers, no wonder they moved to consoles. If I sell a $50 Mega Drive game, I'll probably get my $40 out of it. I'm not getting some dickhead copying cartridges left, right, and centre. So, yeah, look, had a good time pirating lots of shit, and I hope you sort of enjoy the little bit of a story that's coming to follow. So, yep, that's my take on the old piracy scene. This is a piece that I wrote for Vinci's Is the Old New, which was a website, and they had a competition about an old story from back in the day. This is called Pirating Shit in the 90s. I think he actually wanted me to change the name of it to Pirating Stuff, but this is the entrance that I put in for that competition. So, yeah, well, let's see where it goes. So to put things into context, And the memories all tend to get a little blurred the further things go on, but this is how I recollect the below. I come from a small town in the regional area of South Australia, and my first dial-up experience was with the Tandy Colour Computer 2, when a mate lent me an acoustic coupler and I managed to get it to dial out from my Coco. At first I didn't actually believe it worked, and as the text began to crawl across the screen and unadulterated through on a board, but it worked, and it further cemented my lust for computing. Moving on, I ended up jumping to the Amiga 500, and then to an Amiga 1200 with a hard disk. Shit, I'd eh? But I lived in the rural area, and it was generally somewhere around a dollar every 5 minutes to dial out on a modem. It was a killer. I still remember my mother absolutely fucking freaking out about the phone bill. Because, you know, it was just jump on for half an hour, and, you know, 3 or 4, 8 hours later, you're cruising around BBSs and just generally having a bloody awesome time. I had access to a free few BSs, the Country Club, the SA Country Club. That had a special GIF files for downloading. We used to get there an hour for free every day. Well, we used to yank the modem out at around 59 minutes with some quick on and off action, and quite often you would get that reset and get another hour or so. We would sit around on the weekend with 2 or 3 Amigas lined up, dialed out, playing games, chatting. A few muds, but generally we just grab random software, etc. Anyway, we were pirating shit left, right and centre. And a mate who I met through a local Amiga club and lived in the next town on the way to work had a 1200 like me. And we became pretty good mates. And his sister was pretty tidy. And we knocked together a bit. I'm only around the Amiga Ware stuff. Well, sort of get to the point. When he managed to get access to a pirate bulletin board called the Pirate Cove. And he had a shitty modem. I had a pretty good job. I got a brand new 56K modem, but couldn't really use the thing because of the exorbitant telephone rates. So I gave it to him. I think we flicked off a check to somebody every few months, and we got a couple of hours access every day to the Cove, which was really the Pirate Cove. I'd touch base 2 or 3 times a week, buying flank floppies like a madman. He would just download as much crap as possible. I'd roll in. He'd have cannon fodder, alien breed, or some random utility. Whatever was going on at the time, it was bloody awesome. This went on for a year or so, and we were grabbing piles of gear. And he says to me one day, I've been chatting to the dude from the Pirate Cove, and he said we can come down and copy as many discs as we like for a few slabs of beer. Well, fuck me. When can we leave? So he set it all up. I was the only one that drove. I grabbed some beer and a couple of hundred blank floppies, and we hacked on down to Hallett Cove, small town of South Australia, hence the Pirate Cove. Hooked in. Had a couple of beers and spent the next 3 to 4 hours copying discs. Now, to put things into perspective, this dude's house was a small study, the first room on the left. It had 2 Amigas, both with twin floppies, and then just shelves loaded with discs. And I shit you not, probably close to 3,000 to 5,000 discs. I was in my element. As much as I was into games, I was also into productivity software as well. So there were the latest versions of Lightwave, Imagine, Vista Pro, all sorts of hard-to-find gear and a gazillion games, and all right for the picking. I hooked in for quite a few hours until the dude sort of really started to get the shit up a bit with us copying discs. And look, we rolled out the door with a couple of hundred floppies full of the latest gear, and it got handed on to other mates. It was just one of those things that I will never forget. Lost track of that mate. Who I gave the modem to as he moved away. He did come to a few more gaming sessions as he moved into PCs, but that goes a long way, and, you know, unfortunately, that's one of those friendships that just moved on. The story does not then end there. I moved overseas, sold off all my Amiga gear, got on with life. I moved into the Intel world and got into ICT, got burned out over ICT and moved into a non-computer-related field. Till a mate touched base and said, do you want an old Commodore 286? Otherwise, it's just going to e-waste. Stand clear, that's coming home for sure. I don't think I had lusted over a computer for over 10 years. And when it hit the coffee table, much of the other half's disgruntled looks, how long is that thing going to stay there? I fired it up, California Games, Duke TD, and some other DOS classics. I sort of hit the retro bug. Stand clear, 3 years later, shit tons of retro computers, most of the Amiga, 64s, Amstrad, Ataris, you name it. They were all incoming. True passion is with the Amiga, and fast forward 30 odd years and I'm chatting to some dude on the Amiga user group on Facebook, and we're talking about pirate sites from the 90s, and I mentioned I used to be on the Pirate Cove, and this guy says, well, my mate used to run that. I'm like, well, fuck me, no way. I'm like, I was there grabbing shit for a while, and we ended up going to his house and copying piles of wares one day. Not sure of the dude's name, but I know he was set up in a study on the first room on the left. He comes back, goes, nah, no way. He had it set up in the back room of his house. And in the end, the guy got busted for using calling cards to get the wares. And he was lucky to get off. I'm like, no, that's pretty cool. But I'm sure it was this other place. So, you know, I've got one of those eidetic memories for when it comes to locations and places. I can remember it pretty well. Day later, the dude gets back to me and he's like, you were right, you know. My mate who ran the Pirate Cove took it over from this other guy. And yeah, he did run it out of his study from another house in his first room. So the old memory box works pretty well. And that is the story of the Pirate Cove that got busted, but in a different location, a different time and a distant memory. Stay retro.